still remembers fire. Grass remembers rain. Every scar tells a story carved out of pain. If you go digging, son, best mind what you find. The truth cuts sharp.
Welcome to the Record Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart and with an openness to learn. I say all are welcome, but I'm getting real irritated with closed-minded people. So if you're not willing to learn something or willing to take a look at yourself and piss off, you're absolutely not welcome here. Have some humility as a living, breathing creature on this rock that's hurtling through space right now to maybe think that you don't know everything. None of us do. Morons. All right, got that out of my system. I ran into a bunch of closed-minded people yesterday. I had to deal with them. It's not how I want to spend my Christmas vacation, which has been glorious, might I just say. I had an obligation. I shouldn't call it an obligation. I got to go do a charity event with Poncho Claus on Christmas Eve. And I had to run one other errand on Christmas Eve. But then Christmas Day, I unplugged, left my phone on the charger all day. Day after Christmas, Boxing Day, celebrate Boxing Day by leaving phone on my charger. Just hanging out with mama and the kiddos. Played a little Red Dead Redemption with my cousin Ricky. I've been trying to get him to play this game for umpteen years. We play Grand Theft Auto together. We play Forza together. But he was like, I don't know, it just doesn't sound fun to me. Horses, you know, there's no fast cars and that kind of stuff. And a week of playing Red Dead Redemption 2, he's hooked. He's grinding his ass off in there trying to get all his rolls and his stuff and his better guns. And we're having a great time exploring the Old West together and hunting and raising hell. And so that's exciting. I've been longing for somebody to play that game with. My sister used to play with me, and then she quit playing Xbox for a little while. And that's just one. I have scoured the lands of Red Dead Redemption Online 2, or 2 Online, whatever you want to call it. I've scoured the bounties of that, the boundaries of that county, alone, wandering the woods, quoting Faulkner to myself as I rode horses down canyons. And anyway, long story. It's a fun game. I'm glad that he's finally into it. We're having a great time together. But I did unplug most of Christmas. Unplugged. Really, I've been kind of unplugged since I last talked to y'all. I haven't made any content. I did repost some Christmas content from a couple years ago and last year. But I just wanted to... I did do a bunch of cameos for people for last-minute Christmas gifts. I had a little bit of a financial blow before Christmas. I didn't make as much money on the Christmas tour as I was hoping to make. And came sliding into Christmas a little tight. Making everything happen that I was trying to make happen. And also keep bills paid and head above water. And so I came in a little tight. So I offered a special on Cameo. Did a whole bunch of cameos for Christmas. But managed to raise a little bit of money enough to at least cover one of those bills and get myself out of trouble right before Christmas. Woo! So I'm happy about that. Got to work on the Mazda. Mazdas, every time I let the Mazda sit overnight, don't want to start. I did go in there and I borrowed neighbor's fuel gauge. I tested fuel pressure. Fuel pressure and the fuel pump and the fuel filter are all, it's kind of like a whole assembly, and it goes down the tank on that Mazda 3. It's a 2012 model. But there's a compartment to get to it. You ain't got to drop the tank. It's easy enough. So I wouldn't, and it's not an expensive pump. I wasn't worried about changing. It's a high pressure pump, but I wasn't worried about changing it. But I tested it, fuel pressure's good. So suspect, basically everything I read about the diagnostics is the next step is to dive off into some diagnostics on the fuel injectors. But, you know, I haven't done the plugs on it. It needs plugs. Probably needs air. I put 26,000 miles on it this year. So I know it needs, you know, it needs some basic maintenance. So tackling all that tomorrow. I have the whole month off. I think I told y'all that. I have a whole month off just to do stuff around here. And I'm like, yesterday I burned about 50 cardboard boxes and trash, a bunch of stuff that we had laying around, cardboard boxes they wouldn't even take for recycling. They were so jacked up. And then I hauled the rest of the boxes off for recycling. And yeah, man, did a bunch of cleaning up around the property. I need some advice from you arborists, you guys that know plants a lot better than me. This is all kind of, I didn't grow up working the land, doing tree work and stuff like that. So I've had to teach myself all that stuff. But I tell you where I could use some advice, church, is up front at the front of our property, there's a huge rose bush, and it's probably like two or three rose bushes. And they're a very special type of rose that Rachel's grandmother created by mating, grafting two different types of roses, but it was a creeper rose and another kind of rose. And she made this really cool creeper rose that it'll creep along anything. It loves to climb and flower. The problem is the birds like hanging out in them roses and they poop all the pecan seeds and all the bullshit they eat in the rose bush. And over the years, nobody took care of it, especially as grandma got older and we were living far away. And then Rachel's brother lived here. He never took care of anything in the yard. He just let it go crazy. And I've been steady cutting down a jungle from him, his tenure here. But there's pecan trees, little pecan trees, about, I'd say, 2.5, 3.5 inches in diameter that have grown up in there, and other little bullshit box elder crap like that. But it's thick enough that I can't pull it. I mean, James is going to bring his tractor over. He says we can pull it with his tractor. I don't want to kill that rose bush. So if I can't pull these things without destroying the rose bush, I was planning to cut them at the very base. Just psh, get down there on my little, I got a little handheld chainsaw and just bat at the very base of them. Now, I have tried drilling them and salting them once. I cut them off at the top, drilled them, salted them. They just kept growing. So is there a herbicide that I can use in a spot treatment method just to treat those trunks, that'll kill those trunks without hurting those roses? Or is there a better method to kill those trees so they don't keep growing back there? So please give me your thoughts in the comments. I don't care if it's a 7-page comment. Tell me how to fix it. I'm asking y'all for advice because y'all are all really smart and a lot smarter than me at a lot of things. And I love having this bank of knowledge out here of people who actually do this stuff. Anyways, that's that. Uncle Jerry needs some advice, bro. If you come through. At this point, I feel like I've tried a lot of shit, and they just keep coming back. And pecan trees are, I think pecan trees, the only thing that is more of a nuisance than a daggum redbud tree. Except pecan actually gives you pecans. So there's that. And I love my big pecan trees. I just don't want all them little tiny ones growing through my rose bush. I want to see my roses. Because roses get distracted fighting with them for resources and shit. I want the roses to down the chain link fence and look beautiful. I just want to see them all pop this year like they used to. Well, we used to come over here back when Uncle Jerry was alive. And you come up springtime, right time of year. And we got the biggest azalea in Houston. We got azalea taller than that freaking house. And you'd come over here, and that was, so Rachel's great-grandmother, they called her Granny, Granny Fritch. This was her house. And she had a, she caught birds. She caught wild birds and tamed them. She had bird cages all over the screen porch and mourning doves and all kind of cockatiels and whatever the hell, all kind of birds. You know, here in Houston, we actually have wild parrots, a type of, it's a parakeet actually, but they call it a parrot. And we have all kind of crazy birds here. And she had, she'd just catch one of these birds and train them, and she'd have her a pet bird, and she just had all kind of birds. Green thumb like nobody's business. Her and Papaw Fritch could grow anything. And I'm slowly getting back to the roots, getting rid of all the crap and getting back to the stuff that they planted. You know, they had grapes. They had all kind of stuff out here planted. Dewberries. Unfortunately, all the dewberries are dead, so I got to go. But you can't, it's hard to eat, to just go buy a dewberry plant. So I got to go find some dewberries and plant on that back fence. Or maybe not. But I would like to fix up that rose bush. I'd like to see. You used to come over here in springtime. Boo! Pow! Them azaleas popping, them roses popping. And it just looked like a sacred garden that you were driving into. I'd like to see that again. I appreciate that beauty. I'm a bit of an artist myself and a lover of artists for sure. And still, I've never seen anything man has created as beautiful as what nature creates, is what, you know, good Lord, whatever you believe in, provided us. But them roses, boy, they were something when they was just popping out there. I'd like to see them again. I want to tell y'all a little bit about, sorry, I got to fix something here on my phone. Just a second. I'm tackling an ambitious project over the next few years. I'm redoing my whole office, but I'm also just organizing, that kind of shit. I ain't spending no money on it. But I have all this cool artwork I want to hang. I hadn't got to hang. It's all sitting under my desk stacked up. And some of my stuff y'all sent me, I want to move into my office. Shit like that. I really want to take my piston bookends that Blair made me, my Yamaha 750 piston bookends, and take those in my office and set up a bookshelf, because I'm being asked to read all these books now, and I've been asked to do a few blurbs for books. And I'm about to start a new thing where I start just reading. It's just a content thing where I'm just going to read excerpts of some of my favorite books, a passage or two. We're also bringing something new to the Wrecking Yard. It's not going to take away from anything. It's just a new thing. But as a writing exercise, I've decided to start writing a short fictional story every week, and I'm going to read it. And it'll have different themes and shit like that. Probably try to tie it into the theme, whatever the Wrecking Yard is that week. But just it's an idea I had, and I think it's a fun one. And we're going to say they're going to be short stories. So, let me tell y'all about Poncho Claws. I have done just a little bit of charitable work in my life. Not a lot. I have spent most of my life scratching to survive. And far too focused on my own needs to worry about other people. I have. I have done some Habitat for Humanity building, and for a few years we used to do this thing with my little construction company called, it was like a Secret Santa type thing where we would go out and do, I would have people send me information by other people that needed some work done, and if it was something I could swing and afford to pay the guys to do, I'd go get it done for them, especially if it's something I already had materials for. Sometimes it's just fixing some concrete steps, that kind of. We would go around on Christmas, we'd do one or two of those things for, it was usually elderly couples, up in Montgomery County, elderly people that were on a fixed income, needed a little help. Not a lot of it. It always made me feel good to do it, but it was stressful, and I haven't done a lot of stuff. I haven't been involved in charitable stuff a lot. And we started doing this Driven Dreams. I was on the Diecast breakdown last year, and they told me about this charity called DrivenDreams.org. And it was right on brand for me. They wanted to raise as many diecast cars for children as they could for the end of the year for Christmas and stuff. And I just thought it was a bang up idea. And I love those guys over there for creating this. And the best part about it is it's not something that you have to be beholden to. You can kind of do it your own pace. I couldn't do the day of giving the same day as they do it because I still had people sending me diecast cars and I wanted to make sure every one of them got in some kid's hand. Literally, I went, took all the donations, dropped them off, and another huge box showed up in the P.O. box full of Hot Wheels cars, and I had to take them with me. So December 24th, Poncho, on Christmas Eve, Poncho does a really big event, and it's his biggest event of the year. And they hold it over there where his place is, over here on the north side. And it's like a big old office building, big open area in the bottom. And they set up lines and everything, and they stack toys and presents. And these are for the kids that really just, most of the people that come to this thing come from an invite from Poncho Claus because they wrote him a letter and told him about some stuff they were going, you know, they had problems with ICE this year. A lot of it's immigrants, problems with ICE, problems with losing their job, this and that kind of stuff, whatever it is. But Poncho says, you know, if people are willing to sit down and write me a little letter, then it tells me they need help. And I'm not here to vet them. I'm just here to help these people. But these are the kids that really just don't get nothing if somebody doesn't step in. These are kids that his parents are always struggling to get by, you know, just to keep the lights on. And it resonates with me. My parents were always able to do for me for Christmas, and I've always been able to do for my kids for Christmas. But I didn't realize how fortunate I was in that aspect. Yeah, I've worked hard for it, but it also takes a little luck. It takes some things going your way. And not everybody gets those things going their way. And so Poncho does this event, and I don't know how many kids were at this event. I felt like I seen 1,000. But these are children from infants on up to 16, 17 years old, teenagers. And they had special gifts for teenagers and stuff like that, and we had donated a whole bunch of these Hot Wheels, nearly 2,000 Hot Wheels to Poncho. A little over 1,000, a little over 1,000 Poncho. Some tracks and stuff that mostly that you guys sent in. And this was like such a cool, like I wasn't, you know, I didn't buy all these things. People just sent them out of the goodness of their heart. People sent them out of kindness. I just got to be the messenger of kindness to take them over there. And Poncho came up to me on a serious note, and he said, I just want to tell you that your fans saved the day. Because the one thing they always struggle with, and I hate to genderize things like this, but are boys' presents. They don't get enough of them every year. And people always want to do for the girls and stuff like that, but people forget little boys sometimes, that kind of stuff. And they were really lacking in donations this year. They were struggling. Poncho's had heart surgery. He's had a lot of trials this year. He hasn't been able to be as present as he usually is because he's getting older. His health is failing. And the man works at no profit to himself
in fact, a detriment probably. He's Poncho's been one of those guys just getting by as long as I've known him, but he does for these kids. And I've known Poncho for a long time, been a fan for much longer. And Poncho was so excited that we brought his donations. He said, why don't you come? I said, is there an event I can come volunteer at and help out at? And I was going to be out of town all weekend. I said, but I'll be back from the Christmas shows right before Christmas Eve. And I've talked to my kids and they're okay with me leaving the house and going and doing for some other people, which I thought I sat down and had a conversation with them about it. And Poncho said, hell yeah, man. And he said, if you can be up here about 10:30 in the morning, I'll get you set up, tell you what I need you to do. And the event goes on about 2 o'clock and we're going to give out a bunch of toys. We're going to make a bunch of kids happy, give them what they need. But I said, all right, bud, let's do it. So I went up there Christmas Eve, about 10:30 in the morning. So before that though, we have a tradition here in Texas. Texas, a lot of people do tamales on Christmas Eve. And that it's just a big deal here and has been since I was a kid, since I can remember. And me and Rachel, of course, always participate. We like to do our Christmas Eve tamales and Christmas tamales. And I didn't really want to do a bunch of cooking this year. I just wanted to hang out with the kids, enjoy Christmas. And Rachel was already doing a bunch of baking. I said, why don't we just do tamales for our Christmas dinner? You know, there's a place here right down the street from us called Alamo Tamale. They've been in business for ever and a day. Rachel's grandma and them used to go buy tamales from when it was just a little hut you drove up to, you know. And now they got a nice building, and you'll get in line there. You'll be in line about 45 minutes, get those tamales. But it's always a good time. They got Christmas music going. Everybody's in a good mood, and the line moves fast. So I got there early in the morning to pick up our Christmas tamales. So I come by here and drop them off before I go back to do Poncho Claus's event. Nope. I'm telling y'all this wrong. I'm getting my days confused. Day before Christmas Eve, I go to get tamales. I go get in line. I'm in line for just a little bit, and largely Latino people, mostly local Mexican folks in the neighborhood. This dude walks up to me. He says, hey, man, my name's Kenneth. I'm a huge fan of yours. I watch all your videos and all that kind of stuff. And, man, can I get a picture with you? I was like, hell yeah, bro. So we snap a selfie together. I shake his hand. We talk to him a little bit. He walks off. Well, there's a handful of abuelas, Spanish grandmothers, up and down the line. And they don't know who I am. They don't have a clue. They've never seen a truck astrology video or record yard, any of that shit. But all they knew was this dude come up and took a picture with me like I was famous. And they got excited. And so the abuelas started coming up to me and go, I need to get a picture with you for my grandkids. They don't have a clue who I am. A clue who I am. But I end up taking pictures with all his old grandmas. And then I had to take their phone and type my name in so they can go tell their grandkids who they took a picture with. And it was just delightful. It just tickled the shit out of me, no end. Before I was up, lines up, got them tamales. Anyways, I go over there Christmas Eve to do Poncho Claus's event. And they have set up an entire booth in the line for the kids to come through the line that is nothing but hot. We got about 300 Hot Wheels displayed on the table in their packages. And I got a box here. It's got about another 800 Hot Wheels in it filled up. Just big old box. And as the kids pick a Hot Wheel, I replace it with another one. Keep that table going. There's another little volunteer working with me. I have my Santa Claus hat on, my Santa Claus suspenders, looking like a East Side Santa Claus, you know. It's hanging suspenders. My Poncho Claus shirt on. It's very festive. Wanted to be in good spirits. Had me some coffee on the way there. I was in good mood. A little unusual. Didn't know what I was in for.
And it was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had. First off, for data collection about cars and what kids like about cars nowadays. I learned so much. But second, just the way they kind of had it set up weird. So like the teenage girls or the girls, there was some people that made purses had donated a bunch of purses. And so they were kind of telling the girls, like, you can have a Hot Wheels, you can have a purse wherever you want. He didn't want them to have to, like, you know, that kind of thing. And what was so funny to me was the girls that I could, these were like teenage girls, like 13, 14-year-old girls, 12-year-old girls, would come up and they'd look at them purses and they'd look at them Hot Wheels. And let me tell you, a lot of them chose Hot Wheels. A lot of them chose Hot Wheels. And that tickled me. That made me happy. One little girl, her mom said, do you want to get a car? And she said, those are boys' toys. I said, cars are for everybody, baby. And when I said cars are for everybody, she immediately goes, okay, I'll take a car. Like, just like that. Like that. She just needs somebody to tell her it's okay. And I just, oh, it made my heart swell. You know what I mean? Like, we're just making car people here. We're making car people. This is what we're doing. Oh, it made my heart swell. The babies that was picking the cars. They got to have the car. And then the little kids was calling me, oh, I wish I could remember the name. Something Bieto, which the volunteer lady told me, she goes, that's like some Spanish cultures, that's the word they use for Santa Claus. These little kids call me Santa Claus. Let me tell you, in the interest of scientific data, I'm the only white dude here. I'm the only white person working at this event as a volunteer. And most people in there are Latino. Most folks come in Latino. Some black folks, a handful of white people brought in their kids. But I'm the only one with the volunteers working. And most of the volunteers are Latino. They're from the neighborhood. They grew up working with Poncho Claus. So many young people. That excited me too. A lot of the volunteers, and I know it looks good on college applications and crap like that, but they seemed eager and happy to be there and eager and happy to participate. Young people, 20-year-olds, giving up part of their Christmas Eve to go make other kids have a better Christmas. Maybe they were once recipients. I don't know. It was a beautiful thing. It struck me. I'm so renewed in the mission of this thing. That I'm gonna try to raise enough cars next year to blow the springs on the Mazda. You know what I mean? Like, I am so renewed in getting to actually participate in this thing. And it was funny to me because my fans, so a lot of people sit in just 50 packs of cars, but most of those 50 packs are themed. And you could tell that it was my fan base because I would say the overwhelming majority of the Hot Wheels we received as donations were classic cars and pickup trucks. Some of the newfangled stuff and the weird stuff, but you didn't see a lot of Lamborghinis, a lot of sports cars. Now, the Matchbox cars, a lot of them were late model sedans, stuff like that. And then some people you could tell were collectors and sit in parts of their collection that maybe weren't valuable to them as a collector, but they knew some kid would enjoy it, right? But that was the bulk of what we had. The bulk of what we had were classic cars and pickup trucks, different varieties. Construction stuff. Stuff like that. You can tell it's my people. You can tell it's my people, right? Which tickled me too. There's a little bit of a signature there. And there was a few girls that asked for pink cars, which we did not have many pink cars. The three or four girls asked for them. I ferreted through the pile until I found them one. And I got most of them satisfied and taken care of. Got them some little pink car that they was wanting. But we didn't get many, I shouldn't say girly, but I don't know how to say it, feminine designed cars. Hot Wheels doesn't necessarily have a lot of that, though.
But what was really crazy? So somebody sent in. So I'm a Hot Wheels guy, right? But I don't like. I never was into all the like really kind of weird stuff. I had a bubble car when I was a kid, the bubble rod, and I liked that one. But I like the big engines, classic cars, that kind of thing. Low riders, I love low. We got a lot of low riders. I love low riders. Low riders were not popular. Nobody was picking them. I was bad. I was like, those are all the cars I want, you know. But they were not popular. They were not getting picked, not even in the hood, which surprised me a little bit. But where was I going with that? There was something funny. So somebody I noticed as I was going through the cars had clearly sent in some part of their collection or something, or they had sent it. Some people sent it through a toy store, like a collector's store. And you could tell they hadn't given them much direction. So these collector stores sent a lot of duplicates, you know, probably something that wasn't selling well, that kind of thing, which I don't care. A car's a car. Kids go enjoy it. But there was about 10 or 12 of this little Hot Wheels car that looks like it's a parking cone. It looks like a parking cone turned into a car. And I saw those in there and I was like, this lame shit. Who sent this? In my head, you know, I wouldn't say it out loud, but in my head, I was like, what lame dick sent these parking lot cone? Who the hell wants a parking lot cone turned into a car? What? Let me tell you something. Those were the first cars to go. Those little boys would walk up that table, barely be able to see over the table to see all the cars, and like a radar, they would lock onto that parking lot cone car, and that was the first one. I don't know if it was the color or just cones are cooler than I thought they were. I mean, we were gone with those in 20 minutes. I would put them out, and the kids would just lock on them and go to them and grab them. Little kids. And I was like, man, you don't know shit about cars, Jerry Wayne. You don't know a damn thing about cars. Because I wouldn't have guessed that. Whew. And then the cool thing I started noticing was that the girls were choosing the pickup trucks. The classic, the old C10, stuff like that. There was a 75 K5 Blazer. Some gal, she locked on it. She goes, oh, my dad's got one like that. Like, it was just... And the girls were picking all the classic hot rods with the big engines and the shit I'm into. And the boys primarily were going for the late model sedans, the matchbox cars and stuff, your regular we used to call them country club Camaros, the Mercedes and the Beamers and stuff, like the Steve Harrigan cars. Those apparently are trendy with the boys right now. And the boys are going for the construction equipment and also the weird stuff, the weird builds. But the girls kept coming, and they would pick them pickup trucks, or they'd pick them hot rods. Every once in a while, some kid would ask for a Lamborghini or something like that, and we would dig around until we found them some kind of sports car. Wasn't a lot of that stuff in there. But it just tickled me. That was not the way I would have skewed the way it was going to go. Show me I don't know a damn thing about nothing. I mean, I'm telling you, by the end of the day, by 2 o'clock, I had about 100 cars left on the table and no cars left in that box. We had handed out every one of them cars, except there was about 100 cars, and they were going to take those to the next event. And it just tickled me that those kids would pick the one they wanted, and they'd find it, and they would just be so tickled. Just show it to their mom and dad and show it to me. And I'd help some of them pick cars. I said, what are you looking for? You know, and I kind of knew the lay of the land. And a couple of them, they'd pick the little kids up and hold them over the table so they could see, you know what I mean? It was just put a smile on my old country ass. I tell you that. I just grinned like a freaking idiot the whole time. And there was a couple parents that were kind of grabby and pushy. You know, you're going to see that at charity stuff. There's always some people who are probably trying to take advantage a little bit. You're going to get a little bit of that. But the good far outweighs the bad. The good far outweighs the bad. I looked into a lot of parents' eyes, and I tried to meet every one of their eyes and speak to them, the ones that speak English well enough, and most of them could. But let them know it's okay, because I haven't been in that exact position, but I know what it's like to have you back up against the door and have trouble making it. And it's a hard thing to ask for help. Asking for help is one of the hardest things in the world. And so I tried to make sure that they knew that I love you for coming and asking for help and doing for your babies in the way you know how. This is the way we can do something for your babies. It was a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Remarkable. Some guys came out from the local Star Wars cosplay chapter dressed up as Darth Vader and some stormtroopers and a Sith trooper and a rebel fighter. And I found out I'm still a little triggered by Darth Vader. I was filming Darth Vader and he kept walking up to me breathing all weird. And I got a little scared. I got a little, hey now, you stay on that side of the table, Darth. You know what I mean? I didn't realize I was still scared of Darth Vader a little bit. I was, turned out. At some point, they had sent some volunteers out in the parking lot, keep an eye out, because there was reports that there was an ICE raid going on nearby, and that I'm getting the politics of all that, but it's worrisome. I mean, take Christmas off, guys. Something. I don't know. It's worrisome to see people have to worry about that, you know, when they're already just trying to do for the babies and trying to do something else. It's worrisome. It's not who I was raised to be. It's not who I was raised to believe my people were about. But what an amazing event. It got me like really thinking about some of my past Christmases and stuff growing up. I was trying to think, I love Christmas, but I'm not a big, like, oh, this was the best. One of my favorite Christmases was when I was in my 20s. It was after me and Tori had split up. And me and Joey went around. There were these little RC mini cars that had gotten real popular at the time. They sold them at little kiosks in the mall. And me and Joey had run around and bought a bunch of those little RC mini cars. And we sat up Christmas Eve playing with those RC mini cars and having drinks and bullshit. It was just a good Christmas, you know. Neither one of us had a girlfriend. We were just doing our thing, just hanging out, having a good time. So I don't have, like, you know what I mean? I don't get locked in like, oh, this was the best Christmas. But there is one particular Christmas that I remember as a child, and I think I was about 9 years old. It was a year before we moved to Houston. We still lived in our little house on Sexton Road, our little Jim Walters home. The year before, I don't remember what they were called, but the year before, Bigfoot was really popular back then, Orange Blossom Special, all the monster trucks. It was becoming a huge thing. So this is probably like 86, 87. And the year before, these monster trucks had come out that you put batteries in, these plastic monster trucks, and they had shifters and stuff on the top so you could drive them. And they lit up, and some of them played music and had monster truck sounds. And I wanted some of them monster trucks. I wanted some. I put them on my Santa list. I wanted them monster trucks. Oh, I wanted them monster trucks. And Christmas come, I didn't get any of those monster trucks. In fact, we didn't get a whole lot for Christmas that year. And I know now, because going back and learning about stuff, my parents were struggling really hard that year.
my parents were really going through some stuff. Mom was still recovering from her accident, hadn't been working. Dad wasn't making much money. They were just barely getting by and keeping the mortgage paid on that little Jim Walter house and keeping the lights, you know, that same thing, just keeping the lights on, keeping food in our bellies. Well, you're a kid, you don't know all that. I was just insanely disappointed Santa didn't bring me any of those. I think that's why we've never done a lot of Santa stuff with our kids. Our kids, we've always done presents for them, and then Santa brings them a little bit of something. But we never made it a big deal because I remember being as a kid being so disappointed that, not realizing, you know, the truth behind the matter. In fact, I remember I got a pop-up tent from Sears for that Christmas, and they had set it up in the living room, and I had played in that pop-up tent, but I was disappointed. I didn't get those little trucks. You're a kid. It's easy to get disappointed. I didn't get those little trucks I wanted, and I wanted them trucks, and I guess my daddy and my mama knew how bad I wanted them trucks, because the very next year for Christmas, we come out there to see what Santa Claus brung me and Kimberly. Sure enough, there was five or four of those monster trucks. There was Bigfoot, Orange Blossom Special, a black one that I can't remember what it was, and a Gravedigger. And they all had batteries in them, were ready to go. And when I tell you I drove them monster trucks a million miles, I run the wheels off them fools. Even after we got to Houston for years, I would play with them with my G.I. Joes until their motors were stripped and they were basically just push toys, you know, and they didn't make any sounds anymore. And especially that Orange Blossom Special, boy, I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. It had the coolest sounds. And that's, I always remember that crowd. I remember how excited I was. I took them over to Papa and Granny's house and showed them Papa and Granny. And then we walked down to Uncle Bobby and Aunt Tanya's house. And I showed them off to Uncle Bobby and Aunt Tanya and showed them how they could drive in the dirt and how they made the sounds. And I have found out since then, as an adult, actually speaking to my mother, not long before she died, was that I was telling her about that Christmas, how I got those trucks the year later. And she said Dad had found them on clearance after Christmas. And he had gotten just a little bit of a bonus check from his company. And him and Mama went and bought all those trucks for me for the next year and held them all year for the next Christmas. And that's a Christmas I really remember. And it's not just that. I remember we had a big Christmas party at Papa and Granny. Papa and Granny were the Christmas party type. Everybody came over there and they had some drinks and the music was going. You know, one of the things I've become disillusioned with doing the Christmas tour over the years. And it's not even necessarily disillusion, but it's all based on William Lee Martin's Christmases he grew up with, and he grew up different than I did. He grew up a lot more cowboy, shall we say. And they had different music than we grew up. I grew up, yeah, we had all the religious music, Away in a Manger, Silent Night, and all that stuff, but the Christmas parties at Papa and Granny's house was Pretty Purple Snowflakes and What Christmas Means to Me by Stevie Wonder. And it was a lot of pop Christmas, you know what I mean? You hear little Bing Crosby and David Bowie. And it was just, you know, it was a little more pop-influenced Christmas. And I think if I ever do my own Christmas show, I'm going to have some of that music. You know, Merry Christmas, Baby by Otis Redding, that kind of stuff. Not so much of the country and the overly religious stuff. As much as I enjoy the religious stuff, you know.
But that's a Christmas I really remember. The other Christmas I really remember is the year. I mean, I had an inkling already. You're not stupid as a kid. You hear your friends talk, but I was a late believer in Santa Claus. And I think most of us can remember the period of time where we weren't sure it was real anymore. But we didn't want to not believe it anymore. Even though all signs were pointing to it, probably was our parents, you know. And it was the year I kind of like really found out for sure. I think I was, it was either the year I was 11 or 12. And Santa Claus brought us bicycles that year. New Huffy bicycles from Walmart. And the way I found out that maybe it was all something else was I happened to wake up in the middle of the night on Christmas Eve, and I crept to the door and wanted to look out in the room to see if maybe catch a peek of the old man, old Santa Claus himself, you know, or maybe he'd already been there and I'd get the first look at what he brung us. And I crept out there, and there's nothing going on in the living room, and I walked out in the living room, but the door to the garage was open. And I could hear tools and stuff in the garage. And then I heard my dad go into a tirade. He was apparently working on Kimberly's bicycle, and one of the training wheel nuts was stripped or not going on right. And the old man went to cussing and muttering under his breath, and I heard a tirade of shit that I knew was not Santa Claus cussing no bicycle. And I went back to bed and laid with that disappointment, knowing that what I suspect was true is mom and dad doing this stuff. And I remember I was a little dejected. I was excited about the bicycle, but I was a little dejected about finding out it was all a whatever you want to call it, you know. And we were having Christmas dinner. Later on that evening, we had already been out riding our bicycles and all that kind of stuff. And I was sitting by Dad at the Christmas, at the dinner table, and Kimberly was sitting on the other side of me, and Mom was sitting on the other side of the table. Dad was sitting at the head of the table. We'd already prayed. We were eating. And Mama was talking about Santa Claus stuff. What Santa, and Kimberly was gushing about all the stuff Santa had brought her. And I popped something. I was a little smart aleck kid. And I popped something out. I go, yeah, I heard Santa having a cussing fit in the garage trying to build Kimberly's bicycle. And my dad looked at me. He said, boy, not another word. Like, his eyes narrowed, and like I was about to ruin Christmas for my sister. And he, not another word, gave me them narrowed eyes, and I pushed farther. I don't remember exactly what I said, but so, well, maybe it wasn't Santa. Maybe it was, you know, it was something like that. Be honest, the voice sounded familiar, something smart aleck. And I just remember my dad's hand rocketing across the table, and just open smacking me across the side of the head, knocked me out of my chair. Kimberly didn't know what was going on. My mom freaked out. And my old man said, I said not another word. Get your ass up here and eat. And I got up there sobbing and finished the rest of my Christmas dinner. We never spoke about it. But then my mom pulled me aside later. She said, whatever, you don't ruin Christmas for your sister. She still believes in Santa Claus. Said, yes, ma'am. She said, that's not what I was out to do. I just wanted to show them that I knew. But caught a right hand from the old man over it and decided it wasn't worth telling them what I knew. Boy, he had a temper back in. I think my oldest kid is hip. Is hip to the game. Junie's too smart not to be. But I think Junie just enjoys the season and rolls with it. Noah, I don't know what that kid knows. He's so smart. It's hard for me to, but he's hard to get one over on, but he still talks about Santa. He still loves that stupid elf on a shelf. Oh, I wish we had never brought that damn thing home. You sit there every night try to cook up a different scheme for that dumbass elf to do. I'm about ready to choke at some 50. I can't wait for him. I'm glad he goes back to North Pole every year. We did a fun thing this year. We bought this big Tetris game from Costco, and it's like a big stand-up, and it teeter-totters, and it's got the Tetris pieces. They're big and plastic, and as a family, you take turns rolling this big rubber dice and playing the Tetris piece you have to play and see how high you can get it. It's almost like Tetris Jenga before it falls apart. And we've had a lot of good time. We also, way earlier in the year when the Switch 2s had released, Rachel found one on a special deal on sale from Costco earlier in the year, and we had pulled up our little bit of money and bought it. We've been sitting on that about half the year, and we're excited. So we've all been playing video games too. We've all been sitting around playing Mario Kart World and having a great time. That game's just fantastic. And it was nice to go do that event and be able to do something useful myself and feel helpful, and then also have the privilege to come home and just unplug and be with my family, not worry about any content, not worry about that kind of thing. Just take a break for a few days, get my head on straight. I got a bunch of new ideas. I'm excited about this month at home, work on some stuff. I've got this new sketch I've been working on, and I think it's so freaking funny. But it's basically if William Faulkner and Cormac McCarthy sat down and had a drink together and had an argument over the importance of brevity and punctuation. And I've almost got the Cormac McCarthy act. Faulkner is easy for me to do, but Cormac McCarthy has a particular way when he speaks. And though he writes in a very brief manner, he speaks superfluously, superfluously. He speaks about a great many things, and he's kind of got an old East Texas thing about him, you know, and he don't say millions. He says millions, millions, you know, and he's got a funny way of speaking. So I about got it. And I realized I spent all this time trying to get his accent down the way he speaks, and realized most people probably don't even know how Cormac McCarthy speaks. They expect him to sound like his book, and he doesn't. He doesn't talk like he writes at all. The way he speaks is fantastic. Faulkner very much spoke in the manner in which he wrote. Just one long run-on sort of la 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 la. Very flowery language. He was a pompous, indulgent drunk, you know, and that's what I love about him. I'm a bit of a pompous, indulgent drunk myself when I write. So I enjoy that about him. So he's easy enough to do. Anyway, I think that sketch is going to be funny. I got some shop talk stuff I'm working on. I'm excited. We're going to have a fun first of the year putting out some new content. The cameo stuff. Bro, I got asked to do a cameo for Tom Beaudet. And most people know Tom Beaudet as the Motel 6 guy. We'll leave the light on for you. Right? He was a spokesman. But Tom Beaudet, storyteller, writer, old school radio man from way back in the day. He's on... is it NPR? Does a thing called Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's like a little show. He's on there all the time. Really funny guy. Tom Beaudet is a old school creative. And his wife got into Cameo and sent me a request to do a special cameo for Tom Beaudet, because she said he was a fan and he really loved my Faulkner videos. And he's like 70. He's a woodworker in Vermont now. And it was like a full circle thing. Like, this is one of the voices I want to be like. This is one of the dudes that really tickles. Tom Beaudet, I've read some of his writing, some of his books, and he had a beautiful way of writing warm without being overly sentimental. Now, I veer into overly sentimental, but Tom
was very good at writing warm without veering into the overly sentimental area. He had a knack about it. Tom, the way Tom told a story, it seemed like he was working on something and he just had time to tell you this story. Tom is like, he was an incredible writer. I had such a fun time doing his cameo for him. And then I posted the screenshot from the request for the cameo on Facebook. Just share it with people. Like, this is crazy. Can't believe I got asked to do a cameo for Tom Baudette. Now, when you go into Cameo and you make a request because you're asking for a personalized video from a stranger to a stranger, I don't know half these people ask me for videos. You have to put in your pronouns. You have to put in, you know, he, him, they, them, whatever it is you want for your pronouns. So that when I make your personalized video, especially if you're a Pat, Carrie, Terry, Tracy, Stacy, Hillary, you know, any of those androgynous names, then I know who I'm talking to, right? It's just a part of the app. So it's in there. So behind everybody's name, it showed their pronouns. And it, of all the people just in enjoyment and leave the light on and think about Tom Baudette, there's two or three of these dudes that were, oh, I read it right up until I got the pronouns part. I ain't about that nonsense, which is just the wildest takeaway from that I can begin to imagine. And I don't care what your hang-up is about it. Honestly, I think it's stupid. I don't care what you think about gender. It's not that big a deal for me. It's just I was raised to treat people with some respect, and I call people what they want to be called. Regardless what that pronoun is, regardless what that gender is, what I treat people the way they want to be treated, the way they ask me to treat them. It's the way I was raised. Maybe some people was raised different. Maybe some people was raised that you call people whatever you think they are based on some inert. I don't understand it, to be honest with you. I know some people have gotten upset about gender fluidity and all this sort of thing, and I'm not even getting into politics all that because I think most of it's political driven. I don't think it's really fact-based or anything like that. Human beings have been complicated far longer than we've been talking about. Cultures knew that thousands of years ago. There's plenty of information out there on that. Language knew it centuries ago. English has been using they for a single person since before electricity, before plumbing, before anybody watching this podcast was born. So these people acting like it's a new thing, it's just new to them. It's not new to anybody else who's read or understand. They is used as a singular in the Bible. They is used as a singular by Chaucer. This is a very old concept. This is not new information, but somebody's decided to weaponize it and make it a political talking point, and that's why it's become a problem. I don't have bandwidth for those people. I don't have, if you're a grown-ass human and you have enough space in your life to be triggered about that, we don't have anything in common. I don't have the bandwidth to deal with you. Sorry. I don't have the bandwidth to deal with triggers about that. I just don't. I ain't got it. Sorry. Maybe I should be better. But I wish people understood that everything they don't understand is not aimed at them. Not every change is an insult. The world doesn't owe anybody a pause button while they catch up emotionally. You know? I think people confuse resistance with righteousness sometimes. And the future isn't confused. The world's going to keep moving. It's just done waiting on people like that. So I just don't, I was so surprised that people, that's what folks, and it was just a few, it's just a handful of people got all hung up on it. But regardless, they were all hung up on it because they were making some wild assumption about it when really in the app it asked for it because it's necessary when you're making personal video. Pronouns are a literary tool that have been used since the beginning of writing. So I don't know. I was really surprised by that. Bottom line is, I got to do a cameo for Tom Bodette, and I feel on top of the world about that. Know that Tom Bodette watches my stuff, Mister. I did. Of course, I ended the cameo was, I said, Tom, you know, I know you're a storyteller and a creative, and a great writer, and as a fellow storyteller and writer and creative, who has driven millions of miles across this country, telling stories, and looking for a place to lay my head afterwards. I appreciate you leaving the light on for me. I did find something else. I was doing research on Tom because I wanted to really nail his cameo, and found out that Motel 6 was called Motel 6 because when they first came out, they rented in the 60s, they wanted a radically cheap room, and they rented their rooms for $6 a room in the 60s. That was radically cheap for the 60s. $6 a room. You had a shared bathroom at the end of the hallway with other residents, other visitors. But it was a $6 room, Motel 6. That's how it got the name. Super 8 came in the 70s, and Super 8's rooms were $8.88 when they first started renting them. And their $8.88, what they said you got for that extra $2.88 was you got a private bathroom in your room and a little TV. And that was Super 8's whole spiel. Was, yeah, yeah, Motel 6 is nice, but $8.88, you get your own bathroom. It tickled me. I don't know. If you want to be triggered about my thoughts about pronouns, be triggered. Be mad. It's probably not going to bother me too much. I'm going on. Moving on, baby. World got too much to offer. Get hung up and stuff you don't understand. There's plenty of things I don't understand, you know? But sometimes I just go, well, maybe it's not for me. Maybe it's not for me to understand. Maybe it's just something for me to acknowledge and go on with my life. And that's what I do, you know? I don't have bandwidth. I don't know if it's growing up working blue collar. We didn't have extra time for that sort of thing. That kind of, if you had showed up on job sites I was working on, be like, I go by they, them. One of my bosses would have looked at you and been like, all right, Dave, we'll pick up that hook and get climbing that tower. You know what I mean? That's just all that mattered, you know? I don't think it's guys from that world that get worried about it, though. I think it's people with too much time on their hands. Woo, girl. I'm excited about this month off. I'm excited to get to spend some time working on some new things. I was feeling a little exhausted towards the end of the year, a little burnout, and now I'm feeling renewed again. I'm ready to get back after it, ready to start collecting Hot Wheels, ready to start writing some new stuff, some new sketches. I got some themed truck astrologies planned. I think you're going to be fun. Just ready to get a little more creative. I've expanded my studio since I cleaned out all the Hot Wheels. I did some cleaning in here. Y'all can't see it, but I've organized my workbench a little better. Did not get the lawnmower put back together, but that's coming next. Try to make enough room. Get the Cadillac in here so I can change the wheel speed sensors on it and hopefully get the remaining lights off. I've got a mountain of leaves to deal with, but it's been kind of damp here, and it's impossible to deal with these leaves when they're damp because they just stick to the sidewalk. But we got a couple cool, dry days coming this week, and I'm going to get out there with a leaf blower and rake and go crazy and burn some leaves. And I'm looking forward to that, getting a little time outside the futs and putts. Let's wrap it up right there. Let's do some testimonials from last week. And got them all. I'm on top of it today. It's a Sunday here. I'm recording this. It's about 1 o'clock. Ooh, I need to get a move on. I gotta get this thing edited and uploaded for y'all. All right. At Toad Liver. That's funny. I like that name. These are comments from last week's episode. What did I do last week? Hell, I don't even remember. Feels like it's been a month since last week. I had just come off the road. I was exhausted. I was telling y'all about the Christmas show and that kind of stuff.
That toad liver. Brother, I genuinely appreciate your weekly podcast. I grew up in West Texas, Oklahoma, and now I'm back to my roots in San Antonio. My old man used to say, tougher than granny steak. I'm new to your channel, but I must exclaim, you are a breath of fresh air. See that you're exhausted. Hope you get the opportunity to recharge your batteries. As I posted my comments, I saw that you visited both Shawnee and El Reno. Having grown up in Oklahoma for a good chunk of my life, it's not terribly surprising that you might get a lukewarm welcome from certain towns, especially El Reno. Well, for what it's worth, I now reside in the great state of Texas, have no immediate plans to return to Oklahoma in the near future. Know you had a bad experience in San Antonio with the traffic all, but if you're in the area again, I'll make damn sure my wife and I visit your tour. Wishing you, your wife, and the cat a Merry Christmas. Why Prospero? I love San Antonio. San Antonio is always on my list. Even though the traffic was awful and shit, but San Antonio traffic's always awful. You know, it's just one of them places like that. But San Antonio is always on my list. So I play a club there called Upstage Comedy Lounge over off, is it Waldorf? Walsworth. Walsworth. It has some weird name like that. Walsham Road. I'm sure I'll be back there this year. That club was closing down. They managed to keep it open. So I'm sure I'll be back there this year. Always have a great time coming through San Antonio. I probably won't get to hit it as many times this year because it's getting crazy for 2026, y'all. Y'all know about the Ireland shit, and we're building on to that. And my beautiful manager has just gone to town and really cut loose. And there just ain't no telling where all you're going to see JW this year. Things are getting kind of crazy, you know. And I'm really excited. I got a big-ass show in Nacogdoches at the Lamplight Theater. I'm hoping to get a sellout there. And Nacogdoches is a good-sized college town. So there's a little deep well to draw from in surrounding counties. And I'm going back to Austin, to the Vulcan. And I love the Vulcan Gas Company. And I'm really psyched about headlining the Vulcan Gas Company. They didn't just give me a weeknight. They gave me a weekend night. They gave me a Friday night. And for context, for those of you from outside of the area that maybe don't know, you know, Austin has become a huge comedy spot. It's always been a good comedy town, but it's become a huge comedy spot since Joe Rogan moved there during the pandemic, brought a bunch of his acolytes with him, and he built this huge club called the Comedy Mothership that has become very famous very quickly, thanks to his endorsement. And it's a beautifully built place. And it is right next door to the Vulcan Gas Company. And the night I'm headlining the Vulcan Gas Company, I got worried. I was like, why'd they give me a weekend night? Is Ron White at the mothership? Am I going to have to try to sell tickets against Ron White? Because that's not going to go good for me. You know what I mean? That's gonna be tough marketing. But it's Bonnie McFarlane, and I know Bonnie, and Bonnie's a terrific comic. But I don't mind competing with Bonnie for tickets. I will go head to head with Bonnie. I think that's a fair fight, and I look forward to selling a lot of tickets to the Vulcan Gas Company on Friday night. Maybe raising some eyebrows around there about what old boy that they won't let in can do. You know. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm psyched about that one. I'll definitely go back to Oklahoma. I'm probably just going to go to Oklahoma City, though. I enjoyed my time in Shawnee, had a great experience in Shawnee. I was having the crap before the show. The show was fantastic. The people after were fantastic. I have noticed in the smaller towns, I have trouble selling tickets. And I don't think it's because those people don't like me or anything like that, but smaller towns have their own rhythm. They have their own important events. They got stuff at the church. They got other stuff going on throughout their week that keeps their attention wrapped up. And there's a sense of community there, and they're involved with stuff like that. And then also, it's hard to market to small towns because when you go out to buy advertising, it's hard to say, well, I just want to buy advertising in El Reno, where you might have a large population that ain't even on Instagram or ain't even, you know what I mean? They're just harder to market. So it's not... I'm not punishing these small towns. It's just I can't make money going there. And at the end of the day, this is a for-profit business, okay? It just is. I have to make money when I go out on the road. Otherwise, I can't afford to go out on the road. I have to make money. And I just do better when I go to towns
with a good size, Oklahoma City. I do good in Houston. I do good in San Antonio. I do good in DFW. I do good in Louisville. I'm hoping to branch out to Atlanta this year. I'm hoping to maybe get to Mobile, Alabama, Pensacola, Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, some towns. I'd like to get up to Detroit. I'd like to get in some places where it's a good-sized town that I can draw from for advertising. You know, maybe not in Boston, but maybe right on the outskirts of Boston where people from Boston could easily come to a show. Because I got fans all over the place. I got people all over the place that want to see me. I need to get out to the West Coast more. I want to do some stuff out in California, especially in that Central Valley, California area and the northern part of California. I got a lot of fans in those areas. Washington, up in the Pacific Northwest. So I just got Washington, I probably need to go to Spokane. Spokane's probably a good town for me in Washington. It's a good enough size city that I can advertise well in. Maybe even Olympia or somewhere outside of Seattle. You know, I'll get down to Oregon, like Eugene, Oregon, and maybe somewhere outside of Portland, you know, where the country folks is. But I find I do far better when I go to a place that's kind of centralized that a lot of people from a lot of area can come to, and it's a place that has a lot of hotels and other stuff to do. Because what happens, like when I go to Louisville, I have people drive from all over the place for 4 or 5 hours to come to Louisville to see me, and they make it an event. They come and they spend the night and they go do something. They go do a distillery tour or whatever, and then they come to the show. And so there's something to offer them. You know, people aren't going to drive to El Reno. There's nothing to do in El Reno. You know, and if I can't draw from the actual town, then it makes it a hard sell and a place for me to make money. So it's not a punishment. It's just the way it is, you know. Let's see. At the Croncraft show. Oh, that's our old buddy, 4227. JW, I'm super excited to meet you when you visit Ireland. I'm definitely coming to at least one of your shows. You are standing on the edge of something, and myself, your fans will be cheering you on. Great podcast, as always. Enjoy your downtime with your family. We'll see you on the next one. Hell yeah, Bubba. Yeah, man. I'm super psyched about the Ireland stuff. That's crazy. I have to keep pinching myself because I can't even believe it. I'm actually reading my friend over there, the promoter. I'm reading her book right now. And it's pretty magical so far. I'm pretty wrapped up in it. I'll talk to you guys about it when I finish reading it. I think it's called Final Resting Place for a Butterfly. Her name's Elizabeth Redman. Very talented. She's always been a talented writer. I'm enjoying it. Hell yeah, bro. I'm excited to meet folks in Ireland. I've been reading all the things not to do when you're in Ireland as a dumb American, so that I'll make no faux pas. Probably speaking French is a thing not to do in Ireland. Probably saying faux pas is a faux pas in Ireland, I imagine. My brother went to Ireland and he ordered a black and tan at a bar. And he didn't know, but that's like an affront. That's a thing you don't do in Ireland, because black and tan goes back to like military stuff, and it's people that like raided them, and it's not good. They ain't gonna make you a black and tan. It's called a half and half or something else if they even do it. But yeah, don't order a black and tan in Ireland. I learned about that. I think sometimes people do stuff like that. They just don't think about it. There was a Irish bar here, quote unquote, for the people listening, Irish bar here in Houston. And one year they did Sunday, Bloody Sunday, Bloody Marys. And I was like, hey, I know it's a cool song by U2, but maybe you should Google Sunday, Bloody Sunday. Probably not a good drink promotion. Probably not the best way to promote drink sales. It's a pretty violent, terrible situation. I think people just don't think. They hear something that works and go with it. Chuck Packwood, our old buddy Chuck. Our youngest son is autistic also, and a hug is something special when he will actually let me hug him. Yeah, So that's when Noah gives you affection. He's been sick for a couple of days. Junie got sick at his performance, and then Noah got sick, and Noah hates being sick. He hates taking medicine. He gets so angry about it. But when Noah gives you affection, it's very real. He does not do it. We've never made him do that to people. We've never made him give everybody a hug and a kiss, all that kind of shit. We didn't do that with either one of our kids. One of them to have autonomy over their own body, and that starts when they're very young. And so we didn't make them do that shit. But when Noah comes and gives you a hug, it's because he just wants some love, wants to come give you some hug, and it's rare. When Noah tells you he loves you, it's rare. But it's a little more meaningful, because when he decides to tell you that, and it can turn my whole day around sometimes. I can be having kind of a shitty little struggle of a day, you know. Oh, boy, come here. I love you, Daddy. And, boy, I know he does. You know what I mean? Like, I know he does, because he don't just say that shit. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, Chuck. I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just it's a little more for them that don't give it often. You know, I grew up with granddaddy. Didn't tell you he loved you very much, but when he did, boy, you listened, because the old man didn't tell you that kind of thing too often, you know. All right, let's wrap this thing up, man. I feel like we done went 15 different directions. I just mostly was excited to get on here and talk to y'all. But this is a big thing. It's the end of the year. 2025 is coming to a close. Whatever it was, whatever it's been, is it at this point. We're days away from 2026, days away. I don't get too wrapped up in New Year's resolutions. I used to. Don't get me wrong. I used to do that. I'd tack up a long, hopeful list of things I swore I was done with. Like I was nailing my sins to the wall and calling in an accountant. But I don't think it works. I don't think it motivates so much as it keeps score. You set these big, shining, unreasonable promises, and then time does what it always does. It passes indifferent and undefeated, and that list turns from encouragement into evidence. And that builds resentment. You know, because it's evidence of what you didn't fix, what you didn't accomplish, what you didn't outrun, what you didn't become. I don't need that kind of witness, that kind of. These days, I prefer to take stock at the end of the year. Not of what I meant to do, but of what actually happened while I was busy surviving it. Every small victory that didn't look like much of a victory at the time, but and then the hard lessons that left marks on me, battles I walked away from carrying less certainty and more truth, but nothing resembling victory. This was a tough year for a lot of folks. Despite any claims and propaganda, it definitely cost us all more to be alive this year. We saw a lot of division and pain. Country is hurting. This is the kind of year that took things from you quietly and handed them back later as wisdom, but only if you were paying attention. But congratulate yourself for making it through. Before you make next year crueler than it needs to be with impossible expectations, take stock of your people too. Notice who stood close when things went a little quiet. Notice who only seemed to remember you when you was useful. It's not bitterness. It's just clarity. Earned the hard way. Instead of resolutions, sit with revelations about your year. What you endured, what you learned to carry, what you finally learned to lay down. That's the stock of 2025. That was your resolution. That's what you done. Time keeps moving whether we're ready or not. The fact you're still standing in it matters. You're here, and that counts. I'm rooting for you.
I tell you that every week, and I, at some point you're going to have to believe it. I'm rooting for you. Is 2026 your year? Is it my year? Who the hell knows? I ain't got a clue. But what I do know is we beat the piss out of 2025, though. 2025's done and in the bag. And you had to take stock of it. I'm taking stock of it right now. It was a hard year, but it was a good year. Done some things. Wrote a book. 2025 was a good year. Hard year, but a good one. I hope you can look back at your 2025 and find some things that you accomplished, some things that give you, go, you know what? I scrabbled and I fought to get through this year, but by God, I did this and this. By God, I fixed this, or I at least understood this better. I think you will if you sit down with it a minute. I hope you do. I can't wait to see y'all in 2026. I'll be here next week, just like always. Y'all be safety. I'm JW, and I love you. Ruby, 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 Ruby Soho. Echoes of reggae coming through my bedroom door. Had a party up next door. But I'm sitting here alone. I need to listen to some Rancid before the year's over. I ain't done enough of that. I really do love y'all.